revived by ICE. Gianna Gelosi, Fox News DHS Secretary Kristi Noem saying Kilmer Abrego-Garcia is in ICE custody and being processed for removal to Uganda.
We know that he was taken into custody pretty much immediately after he walked into this federal building for that ICE check. And we also know that there is now a new lawsuit in federal court, and Kilmer Abrego-Garcia is the plaintiff. As of this moment, he's out of prison awaiting trial in Tennessee for federal human smuggling charges. About 150 supporters came out to Baltimore early this morning for a 6:30 a.m. rally featuring Abrego-Garcia. It's been largely peaceful, people singing, playing on guitars. DHS officials, though, have indicated they may deport him, but not back to his home country of El Salvador, possibly to Uganda.
And that's Fox's David Spun. Meanwhile, Maryland Governor Wes Moore is pushing back as President Trump looks to expand his crime crackdown to more cities, in addition to Washington, D.C., the Democrat inviting the president to his state for a public safety walk.
To President Trump, that stroll through Maryland meant a walk through Baltimore, and he did not like Governor Wes Moore's tone with that original invite. He wrote this: as president, I would much prefer that he clean up this crime disaster before I go for a walk there. Stop talking and get to work, Wes. Then I'll see you on the streets. That's just as D.C.'s Democrat officials dispute the need for federal control of the police force, just like Governor Moore has been touting these falling crime rates in Baltimore after that pandemic spike.
That's Fox's Alexandria Hoff. Meanwhile, a White House official confirms to Fox that President Trump is expected to sign an executive order this morning that would end cashless bail. And they say he's going to do so by threatening to revoke federal funding for jurisdictions across the country that don't comply. America's listening to Fox News.
Are you living with dry AMD? If so, you could be on the road to geographic atrophy, or GA, a condition that leads to retinal cell death and permanent vision loss. But with Izervay, you can
slow it down.
Izervay slows GA progression by targeting a key source of retinal cell death, which may help preserve your vision longer. Izervay, or Avastin Captid Pegol, is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Manol Tuyasosopo. The Yuma Police Department is investigating a shooting at a local hotel on Saturday. YPD says it happened around 9:30 a.m. at the historic Coronado Motor Hotel. They say a single shot was fired from inside one of the hotel rooms, which entered the room next door where one person was inside. No occupants were found in the room where the round was fired upon arrival, and no injuries were reported. Anyone with information is urged to contact the Yuma Police. And fire crews responded early Saturday to a major commercial fire here in Yuma. At approximately 4 a.m., rural metro fire crews were dispatched to Western Construction Components after reports of a structure fire. Firefighters on scene were met with a large commercial building fully engulfed in flames. Crews quickly forced entry into the building. Thanks to that swift action, the fire was contained and extinguished before it could cause any further damage. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m.
High temperatures considerably less this week than the last couple of weeks. 96 the high for today, 67 overnight tonight, 93 and sunny on Tuesday, 63 Tuesday night, 95 with sunshine on Wednesday.
Statistics show that roughly 20 veterans die by suicide every day in the United States. And each day, over 1,000 dogs are euthanized in shelters across the country. Canines for Warriors is the leading nonprofit organization providing highly trained service dogs to veterans with PTSD and other invisible wounds of war.
I'd probably still be stuck in the living room with the curtains drawn, with my back to the wall, with probably a gun on my lap.
The majority of service dogs from Canines are rescues, and with each pairing, two lives are changed forever. We rescue the dog rescues the warrior. To learn more about how Canines for Warriors is saving lives at both ends of the leash, please visit caninesforwarriors.org. That's caninesforwarriors.org.
Eldorado Broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members, Baskin-Robbins, Yuma Cardiac CT, Yuma FC, and Outreach Partners of Yuma. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Valeria@yumachamber.org. That's Valeria@yumachamber.org or call 928-782-2567.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Have you ever done this? Have you ever Googled yourself?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Ritika, come on.
Really? I never did.
Well, you should.
I'm so scared of it. You know how you are. Why? You are so well known. You are.
Give me a break.
Oh, you are.
I Googled you and all the stuff came up. Oh. All the past stuff. Oh. All the dirt. Just kidding. No, but a resume came up. It was something for, I think, U of A. I don't know what it was and when it was, but it had all your past education, and I just go through this. I'm thinking, wow, this lady is amazing.
Aww.
So I want to get into that today because you have a unique story that probably a lot of our listeners don't even, I don't want to say understand, but it's like not even, we don't even think about that other side of the world that you come from.
Yeah.
Right? And we're very ignorant. I would, you know, generally say when it comes to India and the culture there. I was fascinated when I was looking up India, and it reminded me of Europe because it's so diverse.
It's so diverse.
You could be like, I think you're from the north, right?
From the north.
And so the north is completely different than the south. And so lumping everybody into one, oh, you're from India, right. then this is what you eat. This is how you talk. There's so many dialects, so many languages. So many religions, it's super diverse, and it was fascinating to look that over. You have been at the most beautiful place in the world, right?
Yeah, Dalhousie. It was a British summer vacation place.
Uh-huh.
So they used to go, and then because most of the northern is very hot, but that portion, the area where I lived, is a foothill of Himalayas.
Yes, yeah.
And it's very cold, like never goes above 56, 65.
Is that right?
In summer. So it's really nice weather and good. So everyone used to go there. So I grew up in that small town.
Mm-hmm.
My father was the director of education.
Mm.
And my mom was a kindergarten teacher in an Air Force school. At the Air Force station there. And I have one brother, never thought going to move to U.S. So I was engaged to a guy who was in Indian Army. And he came to U.S. And when he moved back to India, his parents said he's America returned. And they asked for dowry. You know dowry?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they asked for $40,000 plus the gold for whole family and then the house and the land and everything. Mm-hmm. And then my mom is a very strong, independent woman. And she said, we're not selling you. What are you doing? So,
wow.
So then,
did that go against culture?
In southern, northern Indian culture, it's very common practice.
The dowry. You want to explain dowry a little bit for the people watching or listening?
Yeah, it's basically is, you know, the guy has a good job and have a good income, sometimes the parents ask that, hey, you are marrying in this particular status, So we would like that you should buy this. This is a tradition of giving gold to the whole son's family, the guy's boy's family, plus also for his education and buying a car, so that you tell that, you know. And sometimes they say indirectly that we would love to have you give this to our son as a gift.
Sure.
Instead of asking, was like, we would love to have, if you give, they give a list of everything for the new house. They said they should, it will be great if they have their own house. It will be great if they have their car. And it will be tough for them from the beginning to have some money. So it will be great to have some money for them. So it's just the way they sometimes use. And not everyone does that. You know, there are other good people will say, no, I'm more care about what the girl bring to my family values. Mm-hmm. But there are certain people who have that.
Are you familiar with what we do here? So when we get married, traditionally, again, it's just tradition, but you'll go register at like Target. You're talking about a house, a car, and gold. And we're like, I'm lucky if I get silverware from Target on my list. That's what it sounds like. You have this list of, man, this would be really nice. Yeah, that would be nice.
Right. Yeah. But that's a fee, like the girl's family has to give it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
It's the old tradition.
I would think
it'd
be the guy, you know, like
in the South India, the guy does it.
Okay.
So it's every portion, like every part of the India, they have a different tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But in Northern is really bad dowry system, and the East also, I will say, is really bad. It's still the practice is going on.
So you were saying you were engaged to a man.
Engaged. He was a major in the army, and then he said, "I'm an America return." I said, "Anyone can go to America." And then he just laughed and disconnected the phone and broke the engagement. And I just applied for a job. And then I remember I got a high school job. And I was teaching at university back in India.
Mm-hmm.
But I got an exchange teaching job for 6 months in Parker. And I told my parents, I'm going to go for just 6 months and come back. And they were like, no, you're too young to go to this another country by yourself.
How old were you at the time?
At that time, I was 26.
Okay.
It was not that bad, right? So, yeah, but the Indian culture, you know, so, so then I was like, I convinced my mom and dad, everyone in the town, this is her age to get married. Not to go in U.S. So they were like, a whole town was so against it. And I remember I came to Parker, and I'm vegan.
Uh-huh.
No one understand vegan in that town at that time. I remember someone said to me, chicken is a vegan, egg is a vegan. I was like, no, it's not. And I, in India, if any foreigner comes in to teach, you get well-furnished home or a house or apartment. When I moved in, they were great. Parker High School was great to me, you know, and the principal was great. He picked me up from the airport in Phoenix. And I said, why you came in? I should have taken the train because I did not do the Google search, as you said. I never did the Google search.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, there's no train. I said, I've taken the bus. He was like, there's no bus goes to Parker. And then I said, I should have taken the taxi. He said, there's no taxi. And I was like, okay, then how am I going to go back? And he said, we will drop you to the airport when you want to go back to India. I was like, okay. I have no concept of grocery stores, how they look like.
Yeah.
And I was, when they, you know, the high school have their own apartments for the teachers. So
they did? Okay.
So I rented from them. But it was not well furnished. So I didn't know. There was no furniture shop in Parker at that 2007. And I didn't know where to go. And I remember 1 month, I have snacks from India. I survived on that. And afterward, I asked one of the janitor at the school. I was like, I really need to shop.
Uh-huh.
So then he helped me. Otherwise, I will get from the, you know, from the school whatever I can. And then I was like, okay, this is enough for me.
Yeah.
But the, you know, moving as a single person without doing a homework is challenging. It was. And then I didn't know how to drive. I walked everywhere.
Okay.
In that town. So I was
you
happy.
Didn't drive back home?
Oh, no.
No. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy in India, yeah. As I was saying that, I remember.
We have a driver. So So
taxi, or you got the
we have our
little, what do you call those carts?
No, we have our the rickshaw. No, but I had our own driver. So
oh, are you kidding me? No,
it's very cheap. It's like $15 a month.
Wow, I'm going to India.
Yeah, I'm telling you, right? At that time, now maybe like $250 a month, but still.
Wow.
You know, so still cheap, very cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, they will come in the morning, drive your car, drop you, stay there with you, and then pick you back and drop and go home in the evening.
At the whole day?
Whole day.
Wow.
So, or sometimes they take the car back and take your father and mother and then come back.
I see.
So, and you know, it's the most populated country, and also because of the, you know, money, and some people really struggle with that. So it's whatever they can make, they're mm-hmm. living on. So
yeah, that's interesting to me. I think it's a neat concept. I mean, it's a lot more close though, right? Meaning your home is going to be pretty close to the market.
Yeah.
So I lived in Spain for a couple of years, and so we would traditionally, we lived above like a little market or something most of the time in an apartment. And so we would just go get what we needed for that day.
Absolutely.
To eat. It's a daily thing. It's not like here where you go to Sam's Club and you stock up for a month of
That's
food.
Exactly right. Same concept. You're so right. Because the British brought that to us too. So the market was so close. You buy for 2 or 3 days, then you go back as you need something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of fresh farmer markets. So it was very different. You know,
stocking up. Yeah, that's what I see the problem he had in Parker, because you were thinking, well, you're just used to going, getting what you need.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work like that here.
No, there was no Walmart at that time there where you can buy furniture. And the second store concept never existed in India. So you never buy used clothes. So someone said to me, go get the furniture from the secondhand store. I was like, I don't know.
What that is, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not like buying
Goodwill
someone.
Or something
yeah,
like
Goodwill.
That.
I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that was like, why should I do that? And the funniest thing was, Adam, when, you know, in India, designer shoes, doesn't like Louis Vuitton or Prada, their designer shoes means good quality.
Yeah.
Cost you like, you know, $50 or $100. So when I Googled...
Are they real?
But they're strong. They're, you know, the...
Are they knockoffs or are they real?
So not the brand like Louis Vuitton or Prada.
Oh, I see.
But they are like the Liberty, their own brand from India,
sure, sure.
Which
okay.
have good quality, made in India.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, at that time, I was going to get into the concept of designer shoes in U.S. So I remember.
What do you mean by that?
Because I wanted to have something strong which will last longer. Because
yeah.
in India, you know, designer shoes last longer, which is made in India brand. But if you buy something, you know, like without a brand, it will made in China.
Mm-hmm.
It will not last you that long.
Mm-hmm.
So I will remember. I looked up, and first shoes I bought is Prada, and I was like, "Dang!" Was like I did not understand that because there was no shop. I have to buy online shopping most of the time. I was like, "Everything is that expensive in U.S." I bought $1,000 shoes. That was my first shoes.
Really?
In U.S.
Prada?
Prada.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I didn't understand at that time
uh-huh.
that you can get $15, $30, $45 from Payless.
Oh, no.
So,
oh, no.
Because there was no Payless in U.S.
That's probably like
Parker.
All your salary.
I used to save it. And then, okay, in every 3 months, this is 4 months, I'm going to buy that.
That's crazy.
And other,
you're looking good. And then in high school, you're just walking around in your Pradas.
But they don't know how I got it, right?
That's the thing. I don't know if I could wear shoes if I spent that much money on them. Cause
really?
Yeah, no way. I would just put them away because I don't want to ruin them, you know? Just by virtue of walking on them and scuffing up the bottom, like Louis Vuitton. But walking around in those red-soled shoes.
I know.
Once he's going to scuff that all up, it's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But they sell, I don't know if you care about this, but they sell, like, you can get them probably on Amazon. It's like a little sticky thing you put on the bottom so you don't scuff them up.
Oh, I have plenty of those shoes, so I'm going to look for that.
Yeah, yeah. So you put those on there, and then that, because otherwise you got to send them back to the people, and they have to resole them, you know, put that red back on. Anyway, I digress. So you're talking about your Prada shoes. Man, you're just living in style when you get to the U.S.
No, I didn't know because there was no one to talk to. Uh-huh. You know, so I didn't have, so I will go to the school, teach, mm-hmm. come back home at my apartment. It was too hot. I didn't have a car to go anywhere. So my circle was very limited.
Yeah.
So
tell me more about, before you come here, you had a little business that you opened. Wasn't it like a little tutor?
Yeah, so I finished when I was 21, my master's in physics in India.
Wow.
And then I had a bachelor's in honors in physics, chemistry, and math. And I was teaching at undergrad community college, you know, and basically teaching physics there. But at the same time, in the evening and early mornings, I tutored students who wanted to go to the medical school entrance exam. So I did the MCAT. I also did their engineering if they want to go to any, because there's an entrance exam if you're going to go to MIT, similar. Right. Okay. India have an IIT.
I see.
So they only choose the students who have a very high entrance exam score.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
At Exceptional Community Hospital Yuma, we are committed to delivering compassionate care and exceptional services. With a concierge-style approach to patient care, you will experience short wait times and medical attention that's fast, professional, and personalized. We accept all insurance plans, honor in-network benefits, and are nationally accredited for quality and patient safety. Exceptional Community Hospital Yuma, where you are never just a patient. You are family.
For 248 years, proud patriots have defended our freedom as American soldiers. One of the best ways to honor their service is through the Army Historical Foundation's Registry of the American Soldier. Open to all Army veterans, this free registry allows veterans or a loved one on their behalf to create a permanent public record of their service. No soldier's story should be forgotten. Learn more at armyhistory.org. That's armyhistory.org. Sponsored by Army Historical Foundation, Inc.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
The Glenn Beck Show, weekdays at 4 on 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
So I used to do that. After 12th grade, you have to take an entrance exam to go to the good schools if you want to be a doctor. And then you can right away go to the medical school and start studying from that stage. You don't have to do your bachelor's of sciences or anything.
Okay.
So a lot of the kids, even when they want to do a bachelor's of science, or their 12th grade, their parents wanted them to understand all the concepts so they are successful. So I used to tutor starting at 4 a.m. all the way till 10 p.m. I have like 100 students a day.
Jeez, so, holy smokes.
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. It was fun for me because, you know, teaching.
So how did you do the little business? I mean, was it word of mouth? Were you advertising?
So when I taught at the college, university, a lot of the students who were going there, you know, they start taking, and then at the word of mouth from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, your reputation from there goes out. And then a lot of the students, and once they start having, passing those entrance exam, I have 100% scores of, you know, admitting on the medical.
It's been proven that you're good at what you're doing, and people are getting, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Did you have to do, like, did you have a little office or something where you would meet, or you go to the library? What'd you do?
So I rented, there were two places. I rented one of the places close to the university, and the other at my house. It was a two-story house, and one of the space was just dedicated to the tutoring. So I have two centers simultaneously. Yeah.
Did you have to get a business license or anything like that?
Not in India. Like, everyone can do whatever they want to do. You know how it works. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I'm asking this question, because now that you've been in the U.S. for a little while, and we pride ourselves on being free, right? But I would argue sometimes we're not so free. I mean, here in the U.S., if I was gonna do that, I'd probably have to get permission from my city through a city license.
Oh, really?
I have to get some sort of business structure set up through the state, like an LLC or corporation or something like that. So there's all these things, and so it comes to a point where it's like, am I really free if I have to keep going through the government to be regulated and do all these things? What do you think?
You're right, because there are so many steps which don't help people who have a dream to start a business because they give up. And I oversee SBDC, and I see sometimes so many kids who want to start their own business, but when they see the whole process, they have to do the whole business plan, and they need to get a loan, or they cannot start, and their regulation not to start at their own house, they just don't go with it.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes those regulation is the barriers.
You think so?
Yeah.
Is there, would there be an argument for them?
I will say, maybe it's a quality control here also, because in India, sometimes there's no quality control. Like, education is different, right? It's everywhere. There's so many people who do that. But if you look at the food quality, it's not controlled everywhere in India. But for that case, I will say there are pros and cons for both.
Sure.
You know, so we do need some quality control. So having some regulation is important.
I wonder, as I was thinking about this concept, I'm thinking, like in a true capitalist type scenario, you would let the market dictate, you know, where people are going to spend their money. So if it's a case, this is just me, you know, off the top of my head, like in India, I imagine what happens is you'll get a reputation if you put out bad food, or if you create a shoe that's just wearing out so fast, people are going to naturally spend their money where they feel like they're getting value.
Absolutely.
And that's true capitalism, you know? And so do we need the government to regulate everything? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know if
I agree,
it's necessary.
You.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Now you say it. So you said it. I start thinking the same thing, you know, because certain, you know, the shops, which is the street vendors, they make a day in India more than $1,000.
U.S.?
U.S. I'm converting
really?
That.
In those a little day. Street vendors.
Street vendors.
Wow, that's the business to be in then.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So
there's no regulations there. There's no licenses.
Nothing.
Because
no one
people
can
are going to the ones that like they like.
Yeah.
If they don't like you, then you go out of business.
Absolutely. And then you just stop it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Even the farmers, they have some time outside their farm. They just sell the product without getting any regulation or anything. And they sell it every day. And then they just go home back.
I guess the argument is, well, what if somebody, you know, heaven forbid, dies because they get botulism or something like that?
It does happen. Food poisoning is so common.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Yeah.
Because, again, the quality control, that's why I said. But certain vendors, when everyone gets used to it, it's a fresh food, it's constantly happening.
Used to it, like your tummy gets used to
it? Tummy gets used to it.
Okay.
I will tell you, when I moved from India to here, I will never get sick. When I start living here, I will go back. Every time I go to India, I will get sick.
Really?
Yes. So your immunity change, you build up.
Interesting.
By eating that kind of food, you know, the street vendors, you get used to it.
You were here, speaking of that immunity kind of concept, you were here during the pandemic?
I was here during the pandemic.
So you, family's over there in India, you're here. Was that difficult?
It was difficult because you don't know what's happening. My mom was by herself there. And it's challenging when you don't know if what she needs is there. No doubt people go, go and check on her, but it's still challenging.
The unknown is so scary, right?
That's it.
Yeah. So. What do you think about that? So you're a physicist. What do you think about natural immunity? I mean, it sounds like you hit on it pretty well. If you kind of just take the brunt of getting sick at the beginning, maybe you should be good after that, or what do you think?
Adam, you remember, you're younger than me, so I'm not going to coach you. I'm not going to coach. But, like, remember we used to play in the dirt, and we never used to get sick. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, everyone on a video game, mm-hmm. kids are always sick. Mm-hmm. Every winter, they are sick. Mm-hmm. That concept of being out does not exist. So body does get used to immunity in the natural. And I do believe in naturopathy, and herbal treatment. It's really the natural food and having a natural habit of eating. And then, we all ginger tea, mm-hmm. turmeric tea. How the concept never used to exist in U.S., mm-hmm. but we grew up in India with everything with ginger. Yeah.
Tea is a big deal.
Tea is a big deal.
It's not just a drink. It's an experience, right?
It's experience.
So what do you, how often do you drink tea?
You will not believe, I drink at least 15 cups a day.
Really?
Yeah, but
at home or here?
Here even. So I will have every single label, which even not exist in U.S. Uh-huh. I sometimes order from Singapore. They have a best...
Really?
Tea.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a number one TWG brand, and I always order from them because I'm just so addicted to tea. So,
have you ever had the, it's British, oh my gosh. Martine, you're going to have to look this up. Mason and, oh my goodness, the name escapes me. We went to, my wife and I visited London a few times, and there's this particular brand there, and they have this huge department store, but it's all, there's sections, it's just TTT, it's British tea. Uh-huh. And Mason and Fortnum and Mason. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, no. I was just at Oxford. I wish.
That's right. I was going to get into that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wish I would have known that.
Yeah.
And I got one tea bag, and I was not that impressed. I was like, oh, I miss U.S. tea.
Really?
Because, yeah, so I got Yogi brand. I'm getting used to different brands, Tazo. Mm-hmm. So you just get, certain addicted to certain brands. So.
I wondered if these guys, were just like a, not a tourist thing, but kind of,
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if you'd like it or not. You're the tea expert. So
I'm going to try it.
But when you have tea at home, are you sitting with, like, family? Are you sitting with friends? What does that look like?
So back in India, when we grew up, every 3 or 4 p.m. is a tea time. Whole family.
4 p.m. in the afternoon?
Afternoon.
So you're sitting there.
Everyone comes together, family, whole family.
Do you stop what you're doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. We used to all and get some snacks. Biscuits are very common. That's a British thing. They
brought that, yeah.
Yeah. And we all will sit together and just enjoy tea. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they will make dumplings, from at home, my mom, and some other snacks from the local vendor, and we will just have tea.
So everybody stops work? Stop working and you go?
People still work, but most of the time, they take that break.
Yeah.
And I will go back and I will tell you, even the everyone in having a business, they are so relaxed. Even I was so relaxed. Even I worked from 4 a.m. and 10 p.m., I was relaxed. Here, we all are like, next, what's next, what's next?
Right. When an American is in the mix because they don't turn off.
We don't turn off, yes.
That's interesting. As you're talking, I'm thinking that you can really see the British influence. Like, I didn't realize how much influence Great Britain had on India.
You were so right. It was tea.
Dumplings. The work or the European mindset is like you work, 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 and then, hey, we can take it easy.
Yeah.
I remember going back to Spain, I was with one of my friends and we went to go do this service project for some gentleman at his house, and it was like shoveling something. We were shoveling dirt or something like that. And we were just, working like we knew to work on the farm or whatever. It's just like, boom, just getting done. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. He kind of got upset with us. Like, take it easy. We're like, no. We got to get this job done, And he just could not understand. And he was getting very frustrated with us. We were getting frustrated with him. Like, no, I'm not going to spend all day doing this. We got to get this job done, you know? And so it's a very different mentality there. Not just, you know, in Europe, but that whole surround, I would guess it's the British influence or the European influence. Have you gone back very often?
I go every year.
You do?
Yeah, every
year. How much time do you spend when you go back?
Week or two.
Okay. Yeah, you got to make it worth it. I mean, absolutely. It's a big trip.
It's a big trip. It's 12 and a half hour time difference, which really kills you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So what is that, like a 12, 15 hour flight?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it becomes 23 hour flight because of the layover.
Connections and stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Ugh.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
On your body. Old people body like me, you know.
Give me a break. You're like 25. What are you?
Yeah, I'm 45.
Are you kidding me?
I'm 45.
So. You look like you're in your 30s to
me.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so you had this whole, it sounds to me like you grew up in an education type environment. Mom and dad were both educators. Here, I don't know if I could generalize in the US culture. I would guess if I could articulate this, I would say something like most of the time a U.S. family, the dad is going to be kind of like the end all be all. He's in charge. He's the man of the house, right? Mom is there, but she's more of like the caregiver. Oh, you fell. Let me put a Band-Aid on that kind of thing. That's general, right? In India, what I've heard is it's kind of similar to that, but more like, dad is the man, he's the decision maker to the outside world. Everybody looks to him on the outside of the house to make decisions for the family. But in reality, on the inside of the house, mom is the neck that turns the head. She might not make decisions directly, but she definitely influences everything that's going on in the home. Would that be accurate?
You're absolutely right. You know, mom is the one who will tell even dad if we are moving when he's getting transferred. Because in India, for example, he was the director of education. Before that, he was a principal and then even a deputy director. Then you get to different counties. My mom decided we're going to stay in the same county for our education. So we never moved when our dad moved because certain counties doesn't have the education system. So she never wanted us to move anywhere.
Interesting.
So she makes sure we are in the same place. Dad come back every weekend. We are not traveling.
Yeah.
So even with a major decision like the marriage and even the car. I remember my brother wanted a bike when he was 18. You know, dad was like, no bike. You know, it's not safe. Oh, you know, okay. But my mom was like, we're going to get him a bike. So
she wins.
Yeah, she wins.
Okay, interesting.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Outings around the water are supposed to be fun. Help keep them that way by remembering the 5 layers of protection from drowning. Install fences and alarms around pools. Supervise swimmers vigilantly. Make sure everyone in the pool knows basic water skills. Use life jackets around open water and always prepare for the possibility of emergencies with rescue skills such as CPR. Together, these 5 layers can keep the good times good because anyone can drown, no one should. This message brought to you by the Greater Yuma Water Safety Alliance.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the Patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
I am Rosario Dawson. Cancer is one journey no one should take on alone. And Stand Up to Cancer wants to make sure no one has to. We bring together the best scientists and doctors to help accelerate the development of more effective treatments. And with the support of individuals like you, more patients will see that even though cancer may interrupt the journey, it doesn't have to determine the destination. Join us and let's go further together. Learn more at standuptocancer.org/AA.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom! I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
What does it look like on the outside of the house with Dad? I mean, you mentioned this small town that you grew up in. Like, everybody looks to Dad to determine whether or not he's going to do the dowry or anything like that? Or
My dad was very kind. He was so ready to give the dowry. It was my mom. She was like, you know, this greed will never end.
Mm.
Because you will give it, then next, you know, there's so many Indian festival comes in. They will be like, oh, this is now another one, like mm-hmm. Christmas, there's a Diwali, there's another one. It's never ending, you know, so how would you be with a guy who just don't stand up for you?
That's interesting. Mom says that, right? Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. So wise.
Yeah. My mom is very strong. Sometimes I was like, oh God, uh-huh. I may be like her. Sometimes I think so.
Is your dad still living?
No, he passed away in 2011.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. When that happened, how do you deal with death in back where you come from?
So it took me a long time. The grief is not that easy, you know, and it's the faith which yeah. help you. And I do, and I was here.
The state helps you?
It's a time, I think. Time and faith, you have to just...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, this I see.
I will tell you, it was very difficult and challenging for me for a long time because I was here in US and my brother never shared that he passed away, and he just said you're just gonna come fly back, dad is sick, because he doesn't want to make me upset flying back to like for 23 hour flight. So I remember I got a call and he was like, dad is really sick, we want you to be back. But at that time, they can't preserve the body that long, so they have to cremate the body. And I was not able to, you know.
Say goodbye. Anyway,
yeah, and that was, you know, very difficult. So I still have that memory. You know, your dad always, I was the one who was always want to be a first in everything. I was very, very, you know, and I always say I'm not, you know, competitive, but like everyone, even you ask my boss, he will say, oh, you're the most competitive I ever seen, you know. So, but my dad will be always taking care of me. He will drop me to the school and he will be reading the books to me before the exam. And if I will get the second prize, and I will cry. And you know, the daughters and the dad bonds are very strong,
absolutely
right. And so, I miss a lot, miss, you know, he never been to US. I wanted him to at least visit me.
Right.
You know, so you miss those moments that he did everything for us, best education. Mm-hmm. I went to the public institute in India, and it's a very hard to get into public institute. You have an entrance exam, and they only select 15 or 20 people to get into that. Private is super easy to get in. You know, you just have to have money. But the education is sometimes, for certain private schools are good, but there's too many private institutions. They are not that great.
I see. So dad was there the whole time, just being your biggest coach?
That's it. Mm-hmm. So, and then you miss dad when you have everything and you don't have your dad,
mm-hmm.
you know, to share your happiness. So,
Do you wish that the family would have let you know before?
I do, you know, because I remember when I was flying back, you meet some stranger when you're flying back and you were like, oh yeah, my dad is sick. They were like, they have the best doctors in New York. I was like, I'm going to bring my dad back.
That hope.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that was, and I remember at that time I was doing my second master's from UW and I have an exam and I have to stop everything. And I just was like, okay, I was so quiet when I get back. I didn't want anyone to talk about this. So the grief, it takes time to heal and you still not completely heal. It takes, always those memories come back and I wish I was there.
How does your faith help you through that?
You feel like you will see him one day, and that's help you, give you some comfort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what helps.
Yeah, I think you're right when you said something like time. Time has a, what's that saying? Time
is the best healer.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, sometimes. Interesting. Your brother is here now, isn't he not?
Yeah, my brother is here. He teaches computer science at the college. He's opposite of me, Adam. If he will say one word, I will be impressed. He loves teaching. He has a master's in accounting, MBA, and master's in computer science. But, however, he is shy. He will not do anything other than teaching. He loved teaching.
Well, he never had to do anything because his sister was always in the limelight.
But I was 1 year younger than him.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So, he's very quiet, but he's very supportive. You know, brothers are always there for their sisters. So
mom's here too, right?
Yeah, mom here. She lives with me.
I keep her close by. Yeah, so it sounds like everything kind of worked out.
Absolutely, and I'm very lucky to end up in Yuma. Everyone adopted me as I belong here. That's really like when people say, it's very difficult in another country, and in Yuma, I never felt that.
Really,
never. I had I was diagnosed with cancer in November.
Oh no!
And I will tell you, the whole town was there for me, really? And then how they supported me and helped me with everything was amazing. So,
how's that going?
So I was out for 8 weeks, start in May, and then I just got back to work. So I'm hoping that everything is now good.
Yeah.
Cancer is removed and then I'm just,
wait and see kind of thing. Every 6 months or something.
Every 6 months to go, do the biopsy and
just double check.
Yeah.
But it didn't sound like, at least at the get go, it sounds like they got all of it.
Yeah. They got all of it. Hopefully. Yeah. So, I'm hoping that too.
And you just got back from, was it Brown or was it Oxford?
Oxford.
Oxford. I thought it was Brown for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was one on the panel to talk about the workforce and
about the what?
Workforce and apprenticeship programs.
The workforce?
Yeah.
Apprenticeship? Okay.
Yeah, so the apprenticeship, basically, the model which is changing what employer needs from us. Instead of we teach students and then employer tell, no, they didn't learn everything.
Okay.
So
yeah, because what's your title right now? I forgot the... Say that at the very beginning. You're the
CEO of Entrepreneurial College and Vice President of Workforce and Healthcare Program, and the longest title in the college. So, it is.
Well, hopefully that equates to more money. The more money you get, hopefully.
Yeah.
So that's why you're going to Oxford and you're saying, listen, employers, education systems, you got to modify what we're doing here because the old model is just not working.
Not working. So Reach EDU, they are big university. Mm-hmm. Also. Reach.
Reach EDU.
Yeah. Yeah. And they invited everyone. This is a international conference. Everyone, universities, the employers, and then even the government agencies, they all get together and they talk about the different education model. And this time, their focus was apprenticeship.
Okay.
And they want to see that for certain jobs, like we understand there is a bachelor's and master's and doctorate are needed. But some other jobs, having the work experience and having the student work in a clinical setting and work with the employer can get them, like, for example, paralegal. They get trained under, you know, lawyers. And then can we give them those credit, and then they will take one or two classes and be a paralegal.
Sure, instead, like a certificate or
certificate
something.
Certificate of paralegal. Instead of them going through, finishing a, you know, 12-month of certificate and then still doesn't know what to do, still they have to learn.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here, when they do apprenticeship of paralegal, I'm just taking that example.
Over at the college at AWC?
Yeah. We haven't started
that program.
You taught in the paralegal certificate, but we haven't done the apprenticeship, which I wanted to start. What happened is, first thing is the employer get a benefit. Up to 1,000 hours, they the Department of Labor give them, refund their all the money, what they give it to that apprentice who they hired as a paralegal. And then after that, you know, like they start at a certain level, they come for the training, they have to do up to 4,000 hours, you know, for their certification to finish. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they are going through the courses, and same time they have to do a certain number of hours with the employer. And it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
At the end, employer has a have a choice. They can retain them if they like, or they can let them go.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, Department of Labor asks them that you have invested so much in this kid,
sure,
you should keep them. But this is a benefit to employer, tax rebate, as well as also, you know, to the students, because they are earn-to-learn model. They're earning same time,
mm-hmm,
while they're learning also.
I'll tell you a little story before we stop here. Maybe this was a year and a half ago. I think it was about a year and a half ago. We had to go to, kind of like when you went to Oxford to this conference, we go every year to some conference somewhere, because we have to keep our credentials up.
Yep.
And you have to have so many education hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, to keep it up. Well, this particular conference was in Boston at the time, and Boston is awesome. I love Boston.
Yeah.
And one of the little classes that I took, it was just a smaller course or whatever it was, but it was just more like this guy getting up there and like, hey, these are some things that are happening in AI right now. And as he's talking, like, I was already, I would say, at his level of understanding what the models were at that time and the potential and things like that, and how pretty groundbreaking it was. But I could tell everybody, I mean, you have hundreds of lawyers from all over the country in that room. And as I was looking around, like, I was thinking to myself, these people have no idea, like, what's coming. Like, they have no idea.
No.
And they're just sitting here not understanding. Like, they have a hard time with Outlook or with Microsoft Office, you know,
yeah,
or Google. Heaven forbid Google, like, Gmail or something like that. It's you're looking around this room of 100 lawyers. I'm like, you guys are antiquated, let alone what's coming right here. And so I had this pit in my stomach. Like, if I don't get ahead of this, it's going to take us out, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think there's a way to stay relevant. And like, for example, Martin's good with AI. I'm going to throw you under the bus. But if it was a legal issue, he'll be pretty good. Like, he can ask basic questions. But really what I've found is that I'm not really too worried about it replacing lawyers or CPAs. There still is an amount of human input or guidance that needs to happen.
Absolutely.
And the better the guidance, the better the result.
Absolutely.
So when I use AI for a legal purpose, like from a legal standpoint, because I've got in my mind, I already know when I see a fact pattern, these are some issues that we need to resolve. And I know what those issues are. The theoretical things behind those, that's the value for me. But for a paralegal in the office, they might get a pretty good result, but it won't be as good of a result because they don't know the basic
vocabulary.
Vocabulary, yeah, exactly. These tenets of law that were taught in law school.
Absolutely. And same thing, that's why I said, okay, they can cheat on certain question or find the answer. That will not make them what we have done for getting our master's or our PhDs or EDDs. You know, that will not able to do the same thing, but at least by reading, they can have a basic understanding.
Sure.
You know, to help them, to guide them. And there's nothing wrong. Use as a tool, don't be afraid of it.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like there's a lot of fear instead of like adopting to it.
Mm. Interesting. So. I think you're right on that. I think you said something earlier. I don't remember what it was, but you said, when you pitted them against each other. And that's kind of like, as you're talking, I'm thinking maybe that's what it is about it, because when it gives me a response, I know that's not, that's close, but it's not right.
It's not
right.
What
about this? Yeah. And be like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. You know, apologizing. I don't want your apologies. Yeah. I want right. No,
yeah. And then you sometimes see, you know, I was, there's a publisher company, Cengage. They asked me to do a webinar, and there were three presidents of other universities there. And it was on AI. And one of the individuals stated that he said, you know, AI prompt is going away. It's never going to be there. And I said, I have to disagree with you.
AI prompting is going away?
Yeah, prompting never going away. Basic prompting is going away. Now it's a complex. Now you sometime you enter any prompt, it will ask you, how about I will add this? How about I add? Remember previously it used to be, this is your answer.
Right. It's got a memory now.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, and then if you don't go under setting and turn that off, your prompting, someone else can utilize it.
Oh, yeah.
So your personal information can go out. So you have to preserve your prompting to just your account. That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
For sure.
Talking about my brother in this AI conversation, he's in California, mm-hmm. and he's in education. He's the superintendent of schools over there.
Very nice.
And so we're talking about AI, and I was explaining, like, oh, it's so neat how I was doing this today and that. And he's like, I wish we could do that, but we just can't because of that issue where they're so regulated, they can't risk a student's information being leaked through prompts and things like that.
Yeah, you can have access to anyone's social security or student ID if you will not turn those system off.
Wow, interesting.
You have to take care of that, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, yeah, we got to go. Now we really have to go. You've got stuff to do today. But I want to just thank you for coming in, and hopefully we can do this again.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you so much. You're very smart. I'm so impressed. The setting and everything, your knowledge and the homework.
So no. Really. I'm going to have you on all the time now.
Oh, it's going to be the other way around. So we will have you talk.
You're going to have me talk?
Yeah, at the college. Yeah, I would love to interview you.
I would love to do that. I would love to go over there and talk about AI. If you get me started on AI, obviously, I just
In March, I celebrate Entrepreneurial College and give the awards. And I'm going to have you as one of the speaker. I think that will really emphasize, so I will invite you over there. So.
I'd rather an award, but I'll take...
You should give the award to them who are doing great, you know. So.
Okay, that sounds fun. All right. Thank you for coming in.
No, thank you.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game, marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
You said you'd never buy your kid candy from the checkout aisle. Or forget extra diapers. And never give in to a meltdown. You'd never lick your thumb to clean their face. Never let them have too much screen time. And never bribe them for just one more bite. You say you'd never let them out in public without their hair brushed. Never, ever become a minivan mom. And you'd never give them your phone for a quiet dinner.
Calling boss work phone.
So when you say you'd never leave your child in a hot car, know it can happen. Cars get hot fast, and kids can be at risk in temperatures as low as 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.